Good morning, and thank you very much for being here, and Happy New Year. Fantastic, right? It's a good place to... The fact that you are here, I think, bodes well for the rest of the year. Because so for those of you who are thinking about resolutions, the very fact that you made it here, I think you're off to a good start. You know, the folks who... are still in bed right now saying, I wonder if I could get down there. They're going to wish they were you. No, just kidding. Anyway, thanks very much. I know I said it earlier this morning, but thanks also to all of the wonderful elves, the KTC elves who brought our shrine over here and built a shrine for us last week for our two holiday programs, Christmas and New Year's. We've been doing, I think, Christmas and New Year's for the last 5 years or so, and it's been really fun to be together on these particular holidays, the winter holidays that people enjoy so much. And so the fellowship that we were able to share with everyone last week and today, I treasure these things because it's part of what makes us such a lively, vibrant, caring community, and so it makes me happy. So thanks to Julaine and all the shrine elves, and then also thanks to the folks who came early this morning, and I have to give another shout out to Roberta and Frank for helping, and Laura, who's I think maybe still here, who helped put up the luminaria this morning. So thanks very much for that. And thanks also to Eric and Sammy, and who went to Sammy's Bagels, or did they deliver? Okay, all right. And all of the toaster people, thank you, toaster people. I feel it's a huge success. Not only did everybody get a toasted bagel, we did not blow the fuse. I mean, you know, when you see a building like this that was probably built in either the late 1800s or the early 1900s, you worry a little bit about the electrical system and whether it'll be overloaded by all of those toasters running at once. I was a little bit scared, but I feel a whole lot better now. Glen Helen. Oh, gosh. Anybody who has gone, Marilyn's referring to our annual fall retreat when we go out to the woods at Glen Helen Nature Preserve. And out at Glen Helen Nature Preserve, they don't have a full kitchen, probably for insurance reasons. So we have to bring toaster oven, and we have to bring multiple crock pots.
You can't plug two in one socket.
Yeah, so there you have it. So we're so used to these kinds of things. I think the very fact that our center was housed in a building that was built in 1924, that we were in the Grub Street Center for 26 years, we got used to last century accoutrements, so including me. So anyway, this is the warmest first light. Oh yeah, because first frequently. In fact, Marcus, you were the one who was thinking about getting us one of those thermostats you could control from home, because to keep the bills down, the gas and electric bills down, we had the thermostat set to like, I don't know, 50. Yeah, it was 50. And so whenever we went in, somebody had to go and crank that up to like 76 or 80, you know, so that it would at least partially get warm before the first people came in. So you're right. This is the warmest first light we have probably had in 26 years. And it was because the wonderful people at Thurber Center keep it nice and toasty. And also thanks to all the people at the Thurber Center, because please consider renting this place for your next function, because we've done a lot of functions here and they have not charged us. And so they're getting a lot of good karma. They don't know it, but that's okay.
Donation to the Thurber Center in appreciation.
I think we do, actually. I think we do make donations.
Like
Yeah. So if anybody would care to do that and say how nice they were to Columbus KTC, that'd be great. So as I did last week, I'm going to start with a short prayer. And this is the four-line prayer of taking refuge that's in the Chenrezi Sadhana. If I'm doing it in Tibetan, because I actually have it memorized in Tibetan, I don't have it memorized in English. But if you're familiar with it, you can hum along. And if you're not familiar with it, you can join in your heart and in your mind, thinking that you dedicate this session to all suffering beings. O Sanje Chudang Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchi Sanje Truparsho Sanje Chudang Soji Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Soji Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchi Sanje Truparsho Sanje Chudang Sochi Chonam La Jang Chu Pardu Dani Kyap Suchi Daji Jin Sochi Be Sunam Ki Drola Penchi Sanje Truparsho O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche Tagi Chiwar Pe De Ten Shula Kadrin Jinpo Go Ne Che Sun Te Ku Sun Tugi Ngu Trup Sal Tu So. Okay, thank you. Once again, welcome to everybody who came today. And looks like there's a lot of food left, so we may be sharing when we all come back. Yeah, come on in. We've got I think we've got some more chairs over on this side. Yeah, we've got. If you like the cushions, you can sit the cushions here. If you like chairs, you can sit over there. So we've got a little bit of everything here. I don't know if there's still coffee.
Yes.
There is still coffee. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So just once again, thanks for making this part of your New Year's Day. As I was saying earlier, the very fact that you're here on the first day of the year is a very good sign. It's a very auspicious sign, not just for the Columbus KTC, but for all of you who have in your heart the wish to be of benefit to both yourselves and others, because in a way, that's why we do, I guess if you want to call it do, we do spiritual life. This is why we address ourselves to spiritual pursuits, is because we would like to make things better, both for ourselves and for everyone around us. Because as many faith traditions in the world believe, we believe that all human beings are like a world unto themselves. And that when you save one human life, it's as though you save the world. And so, in a way, what you could say is that by our working on our spiritual life, by us doing meditation, by us practicing the Buddhist ethics of not harming and benefiting. I mean, if you look at Buddhist ethics, what did the Buddha say? Do no harm. Practice virtue and tame your mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So Buddhist ethics is really just about not causing harm to yourself, not causing harm to others, benefiting and taking good care of yourself and benefiting others. And then taming the mind means to meditate, because if we don't practice some kind of contemplation or self-reflection, how will we know when we are harming ourselves or others, or how will we know when we are benefiting ourselves and others if we don't have self-awareness? And so the practice of meditation then is critical or crucial or important, however you want to say that. It's important to us accomplishing anything in spiritual life. So the fact that spiritual life is important enough to you that you're here today makes me incredibly happy. It makes me incredibly happy because this means that no matter what we do the rest of the year, here we are. And as my mom used to say, our hearts are in the right place. Our hearts are in the right place. Our hearts are here with each other. Our hearts are here with the representations of what are called the three jewels of Buddhist refuge. The Buddha is the teacher. The Dharma is the path. And the Sangha, that's us, is the community. The Buddha is the teacher who accomplished spiritual awakening 2,500 years ago in India. And then he taught the Dharma, his teachings, in order to show others how to do the same thing. I frequently say the Buddha was not a freak. The Buddha was not one of a kind. The Buddha's teaching was that all of us have the potential to awaken. All of us have the potential to become Buddha. So as strange as it may sound, every person sitting on a cushion in this room, and perhaps even our friends, the dust mites in the carpeting, have the potential to be the being sitting on a lotus flower depicted on our shrine. I like to say that Buddhism is the ultimate in egalitarian faith traditions because every single one of us has the potential to sit in the boss's chair. And to me, this is what I like to call the good news of Buddhism, is that everyone has this potential. And the reason for this is that all of us have a mind. Some people like to say soul. Some people like to say spirit. But Buddhists, we like to say mind. We have a mind that experiences this world. We experience all the color, sound, light, taste, touch, all of the senses. We have a mind that experiences all of that. The body just conveys the information. The skin doesn't think. The tongue doesn't think. The eyes, the ears, the nose, none of it. We don't think. Those don't think. The mind takes in that information and the mind thinks. And so, because we have this mind that experiences the world, it's an amazing pathway. It's an amazing pathway to experiencing the mind itself. Because the mind can experience more than just this room, more than just this world, more than just sights, sounds, and touches, and so forth. The mind can actually also experience itself. And it can know itself and know its own nature. And so you could say that the mind is incredibly unique, incredibly gifted, and incredibly precious. And this is why in Buddhism we say that everyone has Buddha nature. Everyone has Buddha nature, and therefore they have an intrinsic value. Every being, even the little dust mites in the carpet, have intrinsic value that they don't have to earn. I know a lot of people, I meet a lot of people who say, well, I'm not a worthy person. I've had a tough time in my life. I've done things I'm not proud of. I don't feel good about myself sometimes. And I say, yeah, I get that. I understand. I think it's something that every human being experiences. But try to look at what else is going on. It's not just the things you've been and done. It's actually also this Buddha nature, this mind that you have, this mind that has the potential to awaken, this mind that has the potential to know itself. And so if we emphasize the purity and goodness of this mind that can know itself, then that is spiritual cultivation and spiritual benefit. So what this means is we've been, I like to tell people that it's like we've won the karmic lottery. We have a mind and a body that is capable of attaining Buddhahood. So it's like we've won the karmic lottery. We have, and like any lottery winners, this can go one of two ways. We have all read in the newspaper and in magazines and seen it on television and even on the internet how when people win the lottery, all kinds of things can happen, because the person who gets all of that money from the lottery is actually already a person that's formed. You see what I'm saying? They give the person as they are formed right now $1 million. Right? They give that person as they are formed right now $1 million. So what they're going to do with that $1 million is going to depend on who they've already been. And so the money is just going to magnify. It's just going to magnify who they already are. There's a couple of people who've moved in down the street from me. And my husband and I jokingly call them the lottery winners. We have not met them. But they took a very, very run down, we'll call it mid-century, house. And they have completely expanded and transformed it. Amazingly so. And we said, who would take a kind of run-down house and transform it and make it into something so grand that we could not have afforded to buy it and live there? So we call them the lottery winners. And we think about how that must be to suddenly come into money like that. But really, what we have inside ourselves, this mind that has the intrinsic value of being the potential to be a Buddha, it's amazing. We have this mind. And so what I'm going to encourage everybody to do is not waste it. You have this amazing opportunity to be a Buddha, so don't waste it. And it's really kind of a good thing. Don't be overwhelmed. Don't be overwhelmed. You can be a Buddha. You can be a Buddha. I'm telling you, you can be a Buddha, but don't be freaked out. Don't be overwhelmed. They will not make you sit on a lotus flower. It's okay. If you become a Buddha, your personality will not fundamentally change. And the reason I know this is that I have been reassured of this by a Tibetan Lama who was himself considered to be enlightened, the previous Bokar Rinpoche. He assured us that if we became enlightened beings, we would not lose our sense of humor. We would not lose our personality and become vacant. We would not. This would not happen to us. We would actually be more free to be who we are, because we won't have the, what one author called the deadening effect of ego fixation. Think about that, the deadening effect of ego fixation. I mean, when we are ego fixated, when we say, my way or the highway, when we say, you must do for me what I want you to do, and if you don't, shame on you, etc., etc., etc. Whenever we act in a selfish, high-handed, arrogant way, it's as though we're deadening the beauty of who we are. We're making ourselves a laughing stock. You know, we've seen it happen this year in the political arena. I won't go very far with this, I promise. But we have seen people become a laughing stock because of their arrogance. It's happened. And we sit and we laugh, you know, but the fact of the matter is we could become just like that. I have a lot of friends who are deep into recovery through the 12 steps of recovery. And there's a lot of really good 12-step sayings. And one of my favorite ones is, when you accuse someone of bad behavior and you point your finger, you've got one pointed at them, but four more are pointed back at you. Which means you could be blind to your own bad behavior because you're so busy focusing on the bad behavior of others. You're not even paying attention to what's going on within you. So this is yet another reason why I'm glad you're here today. Because the first day of the new year is often celebrated as a day of change. I do follow social media, and so I saw all of the real interesting memes yesterday about why everybody is happy to say goodbye to 2016. I can imagine. I know that 2016 was not necessarily kind to the Columbus KTC. We did lose our building at the end of January last year, but a couple of good things happened to us as well, in that we were given a great deal of generosity by our entire community. I mean, the very fact that we are here at Thurber Center today is because the folks at Thurber Center said, we want you to be here. We want you to have this place. We're not renting it out to anybody today, so why don't you have it? And so we've got it, and here we are. And we've received generosity from so many churches and organizations. I'll never forget the Tuesday after the fire, Covenant Presbyterian Church opened their doors to us for our first Chenrezig Om Mani Padme Hum mantra chant after the fire. The next Thursday, 150 people were in our parking lot praying with us. People from all faiths were there praying with us. And it was during that meeting that the folks from Tiferet Israel made contact with us, and now we have a temporary home in Congregation Tiferet Israel down on Broad Street. And so we have received so much. In fact, the first 2 months when we were at the MAC, at the McConnell Arts Center, amazing. It fell out of the sky, literally. And so I felt as though somebody asked me, aren't you feeling sad? And I said, well, of course. We lost something that was very dear to us. We lost 40 years worth of recorded teachings. We lost all of the objects that were given to us by the, you know, all the paintings that were given to us by Kemperovice and Karmapa and you name it. We lost so much. But at the same time, we were given the opportunity to look forward and rebuild. And so you could say we lost a lot, and we did. And we could feel sad, but the other thing I felt, and I've said this before and I'll say it again, is that we've been carried. It's as though we have been carried by the goodwill of others. We have been carried by the goodwill of others for months and months and months. So that each step of our way has been smoothed by people who really cared about us. We have an attorney who's donating his services. We have a paralegal who's donating her services. We have an architect who's donating his services. It's amazing. It's utterly amazing. And so, like I say, I feel as though we've been carried to this point. So we do have something to be grateful for on this first day of a new year. And so now, as the first day of a new year is often looked at as a time for change, and as many people have the custom of making resolutions on New Year's Day, I'll make a few for you if you haven't had time to think about it. I'm happy to help out. You know, because, I mean, last night we were all busy, right? You know, so, and so we may not have had time to make some resolutions. I would say that the first of the resolutions we should make is to feel that gratitude for our Buddha nature. Because if we feel gratitude for the Buddha nature, for our Buddha nature, there's two good things about that. Number one, we remember we have it, because sometimes it's hard to remember. It's hard to remember we have Buddha nature, because we feel bad about ourselves sometimes, and that kind of covers over everything. But if we just reflect on the fact that we are alive and we have our fingers and toes, or we have our faculties and so forth, we have half of our wits. I mean, we're kind of with it. The fact of the matter is we have the tools to uncover our Buddha nature. We have the tools. So we can feel some gratitude for that. We didn't necessarily go and ask for this, but we got it. And how nice. We won the karmic lottery. It's good. So now we're going to do something with that. And I'd say the first thing is to feel gratitude for it. And we can feel that every morning when we wake up. Lama Tashi Dundup, with whom many of you are familiar because he came here to Columbus a few years ago to teach us about the bardo, the state after death, death in the state after death. Lama Tashi Dundup, when we first met him, he had an odd way about him. A lot of traditional Tibetans have this sort of sense of humor that we might not at first appreciate. We would say to him, "Oh, Lama Tashi, we see you're leaving. We hope you'll come back soon." And he'll say, "If I haven't died before that time." Rather realistic, Lama Tashi. Rather realistic, Lama Tashi. We thought it was that he was putting a damper on our happiness, but really he was practicing an age-old Buddhist or Tibetan or both tradition of recognizing death and recognizing the inevitability of death. And so in a way, we have to feel gratitude for being alive. And one of the best ways to feel grateful for being alive is to remember death. For example, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said, when he first wakes up in the morning, the first thing he thinks of is, "Hey, I'm not dead." I'm not dead. How great! This means that I have the opportunity through this day, I have the opportunity through this day to accomplish goodness for myself and for those I care for. Which, because the Dalai Lama is an emanation of Chenrezig, the Bodhisattva of compassion, is everybody. Everybody are his family. You know, everybody's his family. And so, even the dust mites in the carpet. I mean, you know. So that's, I think, the first resolution that I can make for you. I hope that's okay. I just put this on your list. Okay. Gratitude for having Buddha nature. Okay. The second resolution I would recommend, I highly recommend, is the practice of mindfulness. Because it's great to have Buddha nature, but like the lottery winner's money, if you just kind of put it on the shelf and don't look at it, it won't do as much for you as if you take it and do something with it. And so it would be really great if you could take this amazing mind that most of us spend a lot of time on the internet with. Should I take a picture for Facebook? Anyway. Hey, by the way, I got to taste it. Okay. This is a digression, and I apologize. But I got the most amazing piece of advice from Adele yesterday.
My good friend Adele.
I actually clicked on something called clickbait. You know what that is? Clickbait is a headline on the internet. A headline that is written so cleverly that you can't resist it. You have to click on it. And so the headline was something strange like, "What Adele Can Teach You About Branding." It was just a single quote from her interview with Time Magazine. And I can't repeat some of it because she used a little bit of an unfortunate language. But what she said was, she said, "One of the most important things you can do in your life is to put down social media and go work." She says, throw yourself into your work. Throw yourself into what you're good at, making art or whatever it is you're good at. Throw yourself into it and don't just wait for people to like you on Facebook. It was an eye-opener for me. As I watched for how many people liked, you know, she said, go out and do your work. Go out and do what makes you you. Don't sit around and wait for somebody to say, "Oh, I like you." She said, go out and do something that is beneficial. So thank you, Adele, my good friend, who I really only know from watching her on TV. So why is mindfulness the second thing that I recommend resolution-wise? It's because if we remember, because mindfulness is just about remembering. It's about remembering that we have Buddha nature, remembering that we probably should do something with that. Yeah. If you had Buddha nature, you'd probably want to do something with that. and not just let it sit on the shelf. And the practice, there's also a practice of mindfulness that we can do. We're here every Sunday. Well, not necessarily here, but you can find us every Sunday from 10 to 11 in the morning on Sunday mornings, meditating as a group. Many lamas have talked about the benefits of doing practice in a group. For one thing, you have somebody who is helping to hold you accountable so that when your mind goes to, I wonder what people are saying on Facebook today, that we can just put the phone down and breathe. You know, and so being able to come and visit us every Sunday is great. If you can, great. If you can't, because you're working and other things are going on, I totally get that. But try to do some meditation at home. Try to do some meditation at home. I have some friends who are extremely busy people, and it's hard for them to find time to meditate, but I do recommend it. And what you could do is you could start with what I would call meditation light, which is just remembering to breathe in and out, in breath, out breath, and mentally count one, in breath, out breath, mentally count two, and so forth. This sort of meditation light, just breathe in and out 21 times, once, twice, or three times a day. Could be at your desk. Just do some mindful breathing. Nobody's watching you. They're all goofing off, you know, so nobody's paying attention to you. They're all on their cell phones, you know. I mean, nobody's just going to watch you looking at your desk and breathing. Nobody's going to see that. So if you can do this, just mindfully breathe 21 breaths, you know, in breath, out breath one, in breath, out breath two, in breath, out breath three, two, three times a day, fantastic. I always make a habit of doing it first thing when I wake up because my mind's a little busy and sometimes it's like, squirrel. I'm highly distractible. So, squirrel. So, because of this, I have to get my mindfulness practice in first thing in the morning. Sometimes I'm sitting up in bed doing my mindful breathing because I know that the minute my foot hits the floor, ting, I'm going to be doing something else. So mindfulness is the second of the three resolutions that I'd like to recommend to you this New Year's. First one, gratitude for your Buddha nature. Second, mindfulness. And then the third one is the third resolution I'd like to make for you. Commitment. Once we know we have Buddha nature, it's kind of good news and bad news. Good news, you have Buddha nature. Bad news, I have to do something with it. You know, I mean, for some people, hearing about their Buddha nature is a bit of a downer because it freaks them out a little bit. Like, you mean I have to do something with this? It's like I won the lottery and I actually have to do something with it? I have to actually become a Buddha? Oh, come on. That's hard. Well, but the fact of the matter is we don't have to become a Buddha instantly. We can just become a Buddha slowly and gradually by doing no harm, practicing virtue, and taming our minds. It happens. I'm told by the teachers, my teachers tell me that Buddhahood happens like this. It happens in a moment. One of my teachers said, you sit down on your cushion to meditate as a ordinary person, and then during your meditation, you awaken to the nature of your mind, and you get up from your cushion as a first-level bodhisattva, enlightened bodhisattva. So it's like, oh! But it's not going to happen by accident. It happens in a moment. It happens like that, but it doesn't happen by accident. It happens as the end result of commitment. And the commitment we make is the commitment first to the path, the teaching, and the Buddha. If we have some kind of confidence that the Buddha really did gain and achieve enlightenment all those many thousand years ago, if we have some confidence that that really happened, then that means we also have confidence in the fact of our own Buddha nature, and we also have confidence that we could feasibly do it too. And so taking refuge in the Buddha means taking refuge in also our own Buddha nature. Although, I guess we can't totally take refuge in our Buddha nature yet because it's not quite finished. It's not quite ripened. I'll never forget the previous Kala Rinpoche gave a teaching I sat in on once, and he said, you know, you could say when you take refuge and become a Buddhist, there's a ceremony in which you go in front of a consecrated image and a teacher, and you say, the Buddha is my teacher, the Dharma is my path, and the Sangha is my community. And he said, so during that refuge, taking of refuge ceremony, he said, you could think that you're taking refuge in your own Buddha nature. He said, however, your own Buddha nature is not quite ripened yet. So he said, I would not consult your everyday thinking for advice. Just yet, no. But at any rate, the commitment that I think we need to make is the commitment to working with our Buddha nature. Some people work with their Buddha nature through doing quiet sitting meditation, slowly taming their reactive mind, the sort of selfish reactive mind, the one that says my way or the highway. This sort of selfish reactive mind. And we know that we have selfish reactive mind because if somebody says even one bad word to us or looks at us just cross, we go, how dare they? How dare they say that? Why they disrespect me? Why? You know, so just one furrowed brow in our direction and we get all upset because we think we don't deserve that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The other person could just be having a bad day, but we're not willing to go that far at any rate. But you know how it is. I've been there. I've totally been there. So what we could do instead is breathe, you know, just in-breath, out-breath, when we start to feel our reactions arise with us, whether it's an angry reaction or an impatient reaction or whatever. We could do that. We could respond in a different way, and meditation helps us do that. And so being able to respond differently with that in-breath, out-breath. So our commitment would be to work with our own reaction through the practice of meditation. What I've noticed is when people practice this mindful breathing, in-breath, out-breath, and then a thought comes through, if they notice that thought, sort of touch it lightly with their attention and then let it go, and then return their attention to the breath, what they'll get is they'll get a brief moment of relief because the thought that caused that reaction has now disappeared. Because when you stop feeding it, it disappears. Somebody told me something fascinating this week. I think they learned it on the internet, but I think it's okay. That the longest a thought can last is 90 seconds. And so what this means is that virtually everything is rehashed. I'm just saying. Everything that we're holding consciously on our mind is consciously rehashed. It's stale. It's very interesting. There's a prayer that we recite every day that says, when we meditate, may we recognize the freshness of thought. Because it's not stale. But the idea is when you're sitting on your meditation seat and you can let go of just one thought, just one, you can let go of one thought. And when you let it go, it disappears. What's amazing about that is that if you can let go of one thought, that means you can let go of anything. You can let go of anything. And everything, that means everything's up for grabs. That means the worst habit we have ever had, we can still change. Because if we can let go, consciously let go of just one thought, that means we have the power to let go of other thoughts. So, besides, our mind created those thoughts. Anyhow, I'm just saying. You know, it's like we create this imaginary person and then give them power over us. If we watched little kids do that, we'd say, aw, isn't that sweet? But not so much when we're older. So the first commitment is to work with your Buddha nature through the practice of mindfulness meditation. Get to know your Buddha nature through practicing letting go of all those thoughts. that's why they call it the practice of meditation, because you can't do it at first. At first you let go of a thought and then it jumps right back. And so forth and so on. That's why you have to just keep doing it over and over and over again. And the more you practice, the stronger you get at letting go. Another way you can work with your Buddha nature is through the practice of compassion. It's said that the Buddha's qualities are rooted in wisdom and compassion. The Buddha is both wise, meaning that the Buddha knows the nature of mind and the nature of all things, and the Buddha is compassionate because the Buddha knows the nature of all things. This kind of crazy life we've created for ourselves with our self-fixation, the Buddha knows it's all fake. There's a word for it in Tibetan, kunzop, K-U-N-D-Z-O-P, kunzop. It means completely and utterly fake. It's all kunzop. We've all created it. We've all created who we think we are. We've created this world we think we live in. We've created it in our minds, which is why two people can go to Disneyland and have a completely different time. Mm-hmm. Disneyland is Disneyland. But two people go, one's in a good mood and the other's in a bad mood. And so one has a great time, the other has a lousy time, because they have created their experience through their minds, through the habits that they've developed. So if we make a commitment to practicing compassion, that would be awesome. There's a Tibetan Buddhist meditation called Tonglen, or sending and receiving, where you imagine as you breathe out that you're giving goodness to all beings. And as you breathe in, you imagine that you're removing all of their suffering. This is not some kind of energy exchange. You're just training your mind to wish to take away the suffering of others. In breath, you think you're removing suffering from others. Guess what? The whole world is still suffering. It's just that we are saying, may I someday be able to benefit beings by removing their suffering and its causes, and breathing out and giving them happiness and its causes over and over again. And that's a way to train our compassionate response. I mentioned this last week. Scientists are now studying altruism, that you can train your mind in altruism. You can train your mind in lots of other things, but you can also train your mind in altruism. The first scientific studies were done about the practice of mindfulness and how that changes your brain. Mindfulness actually changes your brain physically. And so now they're studying the effects of altruism. If you train your mind to be altruistic, it also changes your brain. And it also makes you more happy. And then finally, you can connect to your Buddha nature through the practices of mantra and visualization, such as the Chenrezig practice we do every Tuesday night at 7, and the first two Sundays of the month at 10. Yeah, while a group of people is sitting silently in our main shrine room, in one of our other little shrine rooms there, I think it's in the nursery, at Tiberet Israel, people are doing Chenrezig chant the first two Sundays of the month. And so so wherever you choose to join us, or if you just choose to recite the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum at home, it's a way of relating to your Buddha nature. Your Buddha nature is like, they compare it to a diamond, in that it's a single thing, and yet it has many facets, like a cut crystal or a cut diamond. And that those many facets are the many qualities that we have that arise from wisdom and compassion. And so each of the syllables of the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, hone a particular type of wisdom and reverse a certain kind of mental affliction. Om reverses pride, Ma jealousy, Ni is attachment, Pe is ignorance, Me is stinginess, and Hung is anger. So if we recite the mantra Om Mani Padme Hum with this kind of mindfulness, we can think, may it purify me and the whole world of all of these negative things, and may the wisdom that is underneath be revealed. I was doing that this morning. And I recommend that lots of people do this. Recite Om Mani Padme Hum. You don't have to do a long sadhana. You can just recite it in your car and think, may this go where it needs to go to benefit beings. May it go to Washington, D.C. May it go to the state government. May it go, you know, to the city. May it go to people who are suffering everywhere around the globe. And think that all of those beings who have Buddha nature who are trapped in negative states, may they all be free. So those are my three resolutions for you. I hope you don't mind that I made them for you in advance. But having a sense of gratitude for your Buddha nature, being grateful to be alive, because where there's life, there's hope. I still believe that. And then the mindfulness, practicing mindfulness so that we can make use of our Buddha nature, and making a commitment to live and develop. This is live from and develop from our Buddha nature is just, those would be three really, really good resolutions. And you can come here and visit us every week. We'll be around. We'll be at Tiferet Israel most Sundays, sometimes we'll be here, sometimes we'll be there. You have to watch us on the internet and follow us on Facebook and figure out where we're, like us please, and figure out where we're going to be. I could go on and on, but that might not be interesting. We have about maybe 10, 15 minutes left. So if people have questions or things they're curious about, you can raise your hand and I can do my best to lead a discussion on those things. I'm just so darn glad you're here. This is totally awesome this is like cosmically auspicious that you all showed up. This is an extremely good sign for KTC for this year. It's a very, very good sign. Yeah. Yes.
Kathy, I was thinking of Trungpa Ujjain's teaching on Tonglen, which is another amazing practice that we can think about. Can you say a little bit about Tonglen and maybe the upcoming teaching in a couple of weeks?
Yeah. This has to do with the second method that I was talking about how to work with your Buddha nature, to work with your Buddha nature through training your mind in compassion. And the practice of Tonglen, Tong means to send and Len means to take. It's a very special practice that's in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And we can't seem to figure out if it exists anywhere else in any of the other traditions of Buddhism, but we know we have it in Tibetan Buddhism. And there's a whole system of study and practice that goes with this Tonglen. And this whole system of practice is aimed at developing compassion in ourselves and for others. And so Kempo Ergen, who's going to be teaching in this room, I think, in two weekends, right? It's the weekend of the 13th and 14th, right? Or 12th. Okay, 13, 14, 15. Okay. Yeah, we're having a Wednesday family gathering. Is that at Tiferet Israel?
Okay, okay.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. And, Kempo, Ergen will be here, with his translator, and he's going to be teaching this whole system, parts of, you know, he's going to give an overview of the whole system. Because when you study and practice, Tonglen, you need support. When you're trying to be more loving and compassionate in this world, in this crazy world, you need all the help you can get. You need all the framework and structure you can get for learning compassion. I mean, you can't just learn compassion by saying to yourself, be more compassionate. It doesn't work like that. It's great, but you need some help. You need some wonderful, easy to remember slogans and methods that can help you learn that. And so the practice of Lojong, or mind training, Lo means mind and Jong means training, is this system of slogans and structure that help people to learn how to be more compassionate. Again, you can't just say to somebody, let go of that thing that's hurting you. You know, be more compassionate. You just can't tell that to somebody. You have to give them the how. You have to give them the method. And so Kempo Ergen will be teaching about the methods, and he'll be doing this all weekend here, the Saturday and the Sunday. I think, is he Friday night here also? Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. So we'll be here. So thank you. Other things that people might want to talk about? Oh, gosh. Okay, one, two, and three. Okay, so one, two, and three.
Yeah. mm-hmm. to make it through the day. And,
mm-hmm.
like, come down.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that feels great, but other times I feel really raw.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did everybody hear the question, or I'll restate it briefly. The questioner is asking about one of the effects of, is saying one of the effects of practice is that it makes you feel more unguarded and more open. And yet there's a complication then, because how do you go through your day being so open and being around all these hurtful situations and difficult people and things like that? How do you, and is there some method or some strength that comes from practice after a while in order to work with these feelings? And the answer is yes. Yes, there is. And this is to me the main benefit of practicing Lojong or mind training in a deliberate way. We need to be, I think, deliberate in how we learn about compassion. We need to be deliberate about how we learn it. And we need to be deliberate about and conscious about the methods that we use to learn compassion. Because that will actually help in this situation. It is as though we are learning to work with our limitations at the same time we are slowly dissolving our limitations. I know that's a little hard to understand, but let's take Tonglen as the example. If we're trying to protect ourselves, then we wouldn't even be able to do Tonglen. But with Tonglen, we imagine. We use our imagination to think that as I breathe out, I'm giving happiness to all beings, and as I'm breathing in, I'm removing suffering from all beings. Now, logically, a person would not be able to take in the sufferings of the world, logically. But actually, with our imagination, we can. Through our imagination, we can. And so that imagination begins the process of dissolving the wall. We dissolve it with our imagination to send out love and to remove suffering. We dissolve the wall briefly. The wall is made of our fear. We're very sensitive. Human beings are all sensitive. I know some people come to me and they say, I'm as dull as a post. You know, I'm not sensitive at all. But everybody's sensitive to something. And some are more sensitive than others. And that's okay, because it actually indicates that you have Buddha nature. And it's sort of close to the surface. And that's actually okay. Although it doesn't feel like that. And so the strength I feel comes from recognizing that the limitations are our fear of feeling, our fear of being human and feeling things. You see, we have a fear of it, so we push it away. But if we can slowly get used to it and slowly become adjusted, then we may still be hurt or sensitive to some things, but at the same time, we will feel stronger because we actually can withstand it. At first, we can't. So you're absolutely right. At first, it feels like you can't withstand it. But then slowly, the compassion is really what protects you. And the fact that you know that those other people and are acting out and doing the things they're doing because they're fearful. That's the only reason that people do bad things, is because they're afraid. They may act like strong, and they may act like they're full of hate, But really at the bottom of hate is fear of something that's different, something that's other, something that's not them, but actually is them, and they can't take it. You know, so what I said to one person once, I said, when someone is coming at you and they're angry, imagine that you're an open window and they're just shouting in pain through the open window that you are. Because there's really nothing going on the ultimate level. Nothing is really happening. Sound waves are going through space. Nothing is really happening. You know? It's okay, you know, but so it's kind of like that. So I'd say continue to practice Tonglen, and when you feel exhausted, do withdraw and get some rest. Because we have to, a person doesn't lift 100 pounds the first day. First day they lift these little 2-pound weights, right? And then they start to lift, you know, heavier weights and heavier weights and heavier weights. So we're going to be overwhelmed at first. But just persist gradually and then back up and rest when you need to. Does that make sense? Yeah, but bodhicitta itself becomes a protection. This bodhi, this mind of awakening, becomes its. Yeah, as a matter of fact, one teacher once said the ultimate protection is bodhicitta, because nothing can hurt you. It's very interesting. So thank you. Yeah. Then there's a question here, and then the fellow over here. Yes.
A friend of mine.
Yeah.
I've never heard of these things. So
yeah.
Do you have anything that you can say on that?
I'm not 100% sure about the 100 defilements.
108.
What I do know is that there are 108 phenomena, and these 108 phenomena can be recited. And in fact, Kempo Sultram Jamso used to have his students recite the 108 phenomena. I can't say that the 108 phenomena are mental afflictions, only some of them are. But the way they recite them is really powerful. I don't know if the sect of Buddhism that you're talking about recites them like Kempo Sultram Jamso's students recite them. But, it's really kind of amazing. Because by reciting them, you learn what they are, and then you learn that they're perfectly pure. So, can you imagine a group of maybe 10 young people walking in a park in Hartford, Connecticut, very foggy summer morning, in a single file, following Kempo Tsultrum Jamso and his translator, and chanting, "Stupidity is perfectly pure." Yeah. And you know, that kind of thing. "Ignorance is perfectly pure." And there's like a 4-line verse that goes with it, and I can't remember how they all go. But he believed in, and still believes in, repetition, because the more you repeat something, we're human beings, it's how we learn anything. Lather, rinse, repeat. You know, it's how we learn everything. And so if you learn the 108 phenomena and learn that they are basically nothing, they're basically nothing first, and then they're empty, and then that they're perfectly pure, this, you can really learn something. Because, it's one thing for me to say that this table is made of atoms and molecules, which we kind of have the idea. But it's another thing for me to put my hand through the table, because they don't exist for me, which is what Milarepa could do and Gampopa could do and all of the great masters could do. They put their hands straight through things because they had achieved enlightenment. And enlightenment meant that they were no longer bound by the same things that other people were bound by. So, I mean, reciting "stupidity is perfectly pure" is not going to have any meaning for somebody. But if you really contemplate it, you'll see that it is not existent of itself and by itself. Stupidity does not exist of itself and by itself. It exists only in reference to other things. And so then in that way, it is empty of its of own nature. And because of that, it's perfectly pure in its ultimate state. I know. I don't quite get that either, but it's kind of cool. Yeah. That's the idea of wisdom and compassion. Yes. Yeah, altruism, yeah.
What exactly does that mean to you?
Sure. You know what I think? I think that altruism means that other people are important too. Because we have to start small. And I think that, to me, that's what altruism means. That other people are important. Other people hurt too. And if I think about how other people hurt, then that will at least give me an idea of what might be going on with them. You see what I mean? And I might actually be able to see a little bit of myself in them. You know, I might be able to see a little of myself in that person. Because otherwise, I won't see any of myself in that other person, and I'll feel free to hate them. You know, it's kind of like what happens with human beings, and I've talked about this before. We have this continuum of how we slowly turn away from or turn toward hatred. And one of the first thing we do is we criticize. Oh, well, that person, they're no good. Oh, they do this wrong and they do that wrong. So that's criticism. First we criticize. Then, to use another really big word, we then ostracize them. That means we push them away. Then the next thing we do is we marginalize them, which means we push them to the very edge of society. Maybe over the edge. We push them over the edge. So we criticize, then we ostracize, then we marginalize, and then we demonize them. And we say they're not even human. And then once we do that, then it's really easy to kill them. And I think that this is what happens when human societies prepare to go to war. Human societies do these things with their so-called enemy. But even in small situations like people we disagree with, we can still see ourselves doing this. And when what altruism is it is training our mind to think that that's a real human being who has real feelings. And maybe they do need to learn something. Maybe they do need to change their behavior. And maybe I do have the power to help them change their behavior. But I also have to understand they're human. Does that make sense? And that's what altruism means to me, is this idea that other people have feelings and they matter. So, did you have another question, or was that it? Okay. There's time for one more. There's one more. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. They were not. Yeah. And this can still be true in some places there today. The Dalit people, which is what they're called there, in India, many of them, interestingly enough, as a political protest, they became Buddhist because they wanted to get away from that identity of being called untouchable. And so they became Buddhist. They said, well, you know, if in your system we're untouchable, then we're leaving your system. Then we quit your system. If that's what your system is doing, then we quit your system. It's very interesting, you know. I mean, human beings, you know, we're pretty amazing. We're pretty amazing. I mean, we do some weird things, but we can be pretty amazing. Well, okay, I guess I need to stop. But again, it knocks me out that you came today. Just totally knocks me out. I'm so happy. Thank you. I'm going to teach you a song. We need to be able to sing when we're happy, right? Okay, I think we need to sing when we're happy. If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Oh. Okay, yeah, all right. No, we're going to do another one. We're going to do a different one. This one was written by the great Tibetan saint Milarepa. And it was translated into English by Kempo Soltram Jomso, the guy who has people walking around in parks. I was on that trip, by the way. I was walking behind Kempo Soltram for like an hour and a half in a park at like 6 a.m. in Hartford, Connecticut. It was really cool. It was so misty. And then he had us walk into this gazebo that just happened to be there. And he first circumnambulated it like it was a temple. And then he went inside and he had people sit at the four corners and had them all recite. Lucky for me, I was not one of his students, so he didn't make me recite because I didn't have them memorized. But it's pretty simple. The first line is, may we live long. So that's kind of important, you know. The second line is, be free of illness. And those are two good things to wish for. Yeah. So may we live long and be free of illness. And then the next line is, enjoy freedom. Great resources and happiness. That's something we all want. And then the next line is, I have to sing it now. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life, thank you. Thank you. I couldn't remember how the next one started. Next life, may we meet in the pure realm. Which would be a nice thing to do. I'd like to meet you there. You know, as the older I get, the more I'm like, okay, pure realms, they're real. I'm just saying. I need to believe in this. Yeah. Next life, may we meet in the pure realm. Yeah. May we always practice Dharma and benefit beings. Does that sound good? Yeah. No, it's not beans, it's beings. You can say beans if you... You can say B-E-A-N-S if you want to.
Yeah, that changes everything.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, may we always practice Dharma and benefit beings, okay? Or beans. Have you ever heard of Richard Stans? Yeah, he's the one you talk about in the Pledge of Allegiance. And to, yeah, the nation for Richard Stans. Yeah, yeah. What? I bet I've ruined it for y'all now. I learned that when I was in grade school. And I have never forgotten it. As well as the fact that they sat us alphabetically in my grade school. And when we sang America the Beautiful, the girl in front of me waved because her first name was Amber. Amber waves of grain. Get it? I had a real painful grade school experience. Okay, I was bullied. Okay, but I did have a lot of fun in spite of all that. But anyway, so here's the. So if you want to say beans, B-E-A-N-S, instead of beings, B-E-I-N-G-S, it's fine because anything that makes you happy. That doesn't hurt other people, but it's
or beans.
But it's, you know, Richard Stans. I'm never forgetting Richard Stans. Okay, one nation for Richard. Okay, so it's may we and I you know, this is Milarepa's aspiration, and you can take pictures of it with your cell phone. Okay. Anyway, so we're going to learn this one. So I'm sorry, I'm holding you after school. Sorry, no erasers. Okay, let's just do the words first. May we live long.
May we live long.
And be free of illness.
And be free of illness.
What's that first one again?
May we live long.
Very good. What's the second one?
And be free of illness.
You guys are good. What's the first one?
May we live long.
What's the second one?
And be free of illness.
You're really good. Okay. So what are we going to enjoy? Freedom. Enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Okay. Enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Okay. One more time. Enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. I mean, that's like everything, isn't it? Okay. Next life. Okay. Next life.
Next life.
May we meet.
May we meet.
In the pure realm.
In the pure realm.
Okay. One, again. Next life. May we meet in the pure realm. One more time. Next life. May we meet in the pure realm. Last one is, may we always practice Dharma.
May we always practice Dharma.
And benefit beings.
And benefit beings.
May we always practice Dharma.
May we always practice Dharma.
And benefit beings.
And benefit beings.
May we always practice Dharma.
May we always practice Dharma.
And benefit beings.
And benefit beings.
All right, here we go. All right, we're going to give this a shot for the benefit of all sentient beings. May we live long and be free of illness, enjoy freedom, great resources, and happiness. Next life may we meet in the pure realm. May we always practice Dharma and benefit be. Okay, you did very well. So anybody who wants to take a picture of this with your cell phone so you can practice it at home, there it is. Thank you. Just thank you for being here. And I dedicate all of the merit from this morning to the accomplishment of happiness by all beings, and that all of us experience freedom, great resources, and happiness in the new year. We'll mentally dedicate the merit to all beings, and may they be free from suffering, come to happiness, and then to Buddhahood. We'll sit quietly and dedicate our merit. Okay, thank you. And thank you to Ron for that. And I actually recorded this, so all right. So now I have to do is figure out what to do with it. Om mani padme hum.